I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, December 18th, 2012. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority. And my goal with this show is to provide ideas and share stories to help you do just that. And today my guest is Linda Hoops, who is here to share how to help yourself and others adapt to change. Linda is an industrial organizational psychologist by training. After spending several years in the academic world, she joined ODR, which is now Connor Partners, and worked with founder Daryl Connor to develop resilience concepts and tools. She co-authored Managing Change with Personal Resilience to make the resilience ideas available to a broader audience. In 2007, she formed an independent practice called Resilience Alliance and now offers the resilience material under license from Connor Partners. In addition to her focus on resilience, she works with various clients to help them develop assessment tools, training, and other materials. She's a licensed massage therapist, a sailor, a traveler, and also a musician. I had to be careful not to say magician. I do that all the time. Musician. So, Linda, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here.
I appreciate the opportunity to join you.
Great. Well, let's talk about this idea of adapting to change. You know, usually when you think of change management, you have this idea of creating a vision and a mission and putting it out there and getting leadership buy-in, trying to get people to move from A to B. And so how does adapting to change fit into that?
Well, it's a great question. For me, sometimes we say change is difficult, and I'm not sure that I believe that, that change is necessarily hard, but change can be challenging when it disrupts our expectations. So when we want or expect something...
Uh-oh. You just went out, Linda. Can you hear me? Uh-oh, I think we lost her. Well, let's just wait a moment and see if she joins us again. I'll keep an eye on my switchboard to see when she comes back in. And let's see, she's probably still talking, not knowing that she dropped. Let's see, I do that all the time, don't you? Well, let's see here. In 47 episodes, this is the 47th episode, this is the first time that this has happened where a caller has actually dropped. I always worry that somebody's not going to show up, but I've never had anybody drop. So I'll just let's be patient for a minute, see if she comes back in. Sometimes it takes a minute for my switchboard to refresh itself so I can see when people join again. Oh, my goodness. This being the first time this has happened, I don't even know what kind of banter I should have while I'm talking here.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm back.
I'm not sure what happened. I just sort of talked through it.
Well, I just heard a beep, 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 a really loud beeping on my line. And so at some point I just decided, okay, I better hang up.
Yeah. Somehow you got dropped. I'm not sure how. So it was basically at the very beginning of when you started talking. So I don't know how long you talked after
well,
that. But
that's not good.
Let's go. Rewind.
Rewind. Oh, change can create disruption when, you know, humans like control and we don't like being disrupted. And so adaptation is really around helping, you know, helping ourselves move through that process of either establishing new expectations or figuring out what we can do to change the situation so it's more in line with what we want.
So why is it important when you're trying to, why is it important to adapt to change or help people adapt to change?
Well, it's important because for people to do their part in change, they need to be putting their energy in the service of the new way of operating. And so if people aren't able to move through that process, if they get stuck, then we're not getting the results we need from change. So so we really are looking for people to really move through the process of committing to the new way of operating. And so it's important because that's the only way we're going to get the results we want.
So as people incorporate it into the way they do their jobs or sort of their everyday work, is that what adapting
looks like? Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so and the thing is this takes energy, right? So as we're moving through, so think about if you've ever moved to a new house. I mean, even if it was a change you wanted, there are things you have to learn. You have to figure out, you know, where's the nearest dry cleaner? Where am I going to go to get my groceries? And there's just a lot of stuff that takes mental energy, physical energy, emotional energy for us to adjust. So, you know, even the positive changes take some adjustment, but the ones that are may bring undesirable consequences, you know, some things that may make us fearful or that may not feel comfortable to us, a new boss or new ways of doing things. We need to move through that process and be able to succeed in that new way, and we use energy in that process.
Well, we also hear about you're the founder of Resilience Alliance. So that word resilience, how does that fit in with adapting to change? How are those related?
Well, so you've probably noticed that two people going through exactly the same change might have very different reactions. So, you know, even imagine Superstorm Sandy came through and, you know, knocked people's houses down or flooded their houses. You can picture some people for whom, you know, they're probably still not recovered. You know, they're still working through the situation and the challenges, while there are other people who have sort of picked up, figured out what they needed to do and gotten on with their lives. So resilience is really that ability to move through disruption quickly and effectively and get to that the other side of that adaptation process more effectively by using their energy well.
So then how can you tell if people who are, you know, if you're a change agent in an organization
mm-hmm.
trying to implement something specific, how can you tell if some people aren't adapting well?
Well, I would say there's probably several things you could look for. One is just people who are stuck. You know, they're stuck in an emotional reaction of depression or anger or whatever, and they're just not moving forward. That would be one symptom of not adapting well. Another one would be that they are not able to successfully function in the changed environment. So they're just kind of casting around for how to make this work, or they're, you know, failing to thrive in the new environment. And then a third thing would be somebody who's using a lot of energy on unproductive activity. So they're, you know, spending time on Facebook or spending time gossiping or spending time calling their friends or complaining or whatever. So any of those things that suggest that someone is not successfully moving through the process of recalibrating their expectations to fit the new situation would be someone who's not necessarily adapting well. And we can see that in ourselves, too. I mean, I know when I'm stuck someplace, or when I find that I'm just being unproductive or thrashing around or whatever. You know, I think all of those are signs that adaptation is not moving smoothly.
It seems like it would sometimes show up as resistance or feel like resistance to the person who's trying to implement change, that if someone's not adapting well, that,
mm-hmm.
that they might
yeah,
perceive
you know,
that
I,
as resistance.
Well, you know, I think the word resistance gets used in a lot of different ways. You know, if you think about an electrical circuit, resistance is just something that happens, right? You know, and there's, you know, you rub two things together and there's friction. Resistance, it can be just the normal human not liking disruption. Or resistance can be more active, intentional, I'm going to try to block this thing. You know, I think we're really talking about the former here. You know, we're talking about, you know, when people are having the normal human reaction to a loss of control or something that is just different from what you wanted or expected to happen, it can look like resistance, but it's not malicious. It's just sort of how human brains work.
Sure. No, I totally agree. I like to say that resistance is in the eye of the beholder. It's the person who's feeling like other people aren't changing as quickly or as enthusiastically as
I think it's from Dan and Chip Heath in one of their books, but they talk about people don't resist change, they resist being changed.
And I
think, you know, it really is the discomfort of disruption that we resist, usually more than the specific changes, although that's not always true.
So how do you start helping people adapt to change?
So I think there's two levels of that. I think the first level is that you can help people adapt in the moment to the change that's going on right now. Like if you notice someone's having trouble adjusting, there are things you can do in the moment. The second level is you can help people develop what I think of as change muscles, which are really ways of thinking and acting that generally help you move through whatever disruption you might be facing. So let me take those in order, and let's talk about, you know, if you see somebody or yourself that's stuck in this change, where do you go?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing that you do is you help people calm their brain down. I've been reading a little bit in some of the stuff on neuroscience and how that affects people going through change. And one of the things that we know is that we have this sort of part of our brain that I think of as the lizard brain. And that's the fight or flight part of the brain that when we get scared or fearful or angry or whatever, you know, that part of our brain kicks in. And we can't think. You know, when we're in that lizard part of our brain, the part of our brain that thinks and reasons and so on really isn't very accessible to us. So one thing we can do is to help people learn to calm their brain down and tell their brain that everything's okay. And we do that by things like just breathing. You know, I took a really interesting continuing education class on how yoga and mindfulness can be important in helping people work through some of those, through anxiety and depression and all. So breathing and, you know, sort of opening up your chest, a relaxed posture, all of those things can start to tell your brain that things are okay. And then we can reach people to help them figure out how to problem solve their way through whatever the challenges are that they're facing. The set of change muscles that we talk about that people use as they go through the adaptation process, there's a set of resilience characteristics that we talk about. And they can be useful both in the moment and in terms of longer-term development. So let me just take a minute and talk through those, and then I'll share a little bit about how they might apply during a change situation. So
okay.
The first resilience muscle that we use is around being positive. And that's not Pollyanna positive, oh, yes, everything's perfect, but it is the ability to see opportunities and possibilities even in situations that feel scary. And that comes both from optimism, being able to look at the glass as being half full, and also it comes from a sense of self-esteem or self-efficacy during change, where we feel like in an unfamiliar situation, we can count on ourselves to bring value or to move through it effectively. So that positive characteristic is what energizes us and allows us to put our energy into trying to succeed in the situation. The second characteristic is around being focused. People who are who have this muscle, have strength in this muscle, are able to prioritize what's most important. You know, when we go through change, there's often a lot of ambiguity. There's often a lot of uncertainty about where we should be spending our time, where we should be spending our energy. People who have thought through what's most important to them and are good at saying yes to the most important things and no to the less important things are able to use their energy more effectively during change as well. Then there's a change muscle that is about being flexible, about being open to possibilities, about being able to draw on a range of ideas and a range of possibilities to move through and try out new ways of acting and thinking. And that comes partly from our own creativity, our own tolerance for ambiguity, and it also comes from others, our ability to reach out to others, to ask for help, to draw on their energy. So we create increased flexibility and expand our options by being able to draw on those flexible muscles. Then there's a muscle that's about being organized. So this is about being able to create structures and processes and systems that help us manage the predictable parts of change so that we can use our energy more effectively on the unpredictable parts. And then we have a proactive characteristic, and this is the last one, that has to do with experimenting and trying things and moving out of our comfort zone and taking risks. So in the moment, in the context of a specific change, helping sort of remind and support people to look at opportunities, to be clear about what's most important with the focus, to open up possibilities, to plan and organize and systematize where we need to, and then to try things out, to move into action and to try new solutions, we can sort of figure out what the missing ingredient or ingredients are for them and sort of coach them through which pieces they need to use. I'll stop and take a breath here, and then you may have questions.
And I just wanted to reiterate, if there's somebody out there listening who's taking notes, that you had five change muscles. Did I count those right?
Yes, there are five.
Being positive, focused, yeah. Flexible, organized, and proactive.
Correct.
Okay.
Those
are great. So then as you're embarking on a change initiative, is this something that you would sort of lay the groundwork for with people? Is there some training that you would do, or how do you fit this in?
Yeah, absolutely. So in a specific change initiative, I mean, we can even think about how we communicate to people in a way that triggers and reminds them about positive, focused, flexible, organized, and proactive. Then there is certainly training we can do for a specific change initiative, or many of the people that we work with are in a situation where they have multiple overlapping changes, and they have people who are really going through a constant stream of change. And so teaching people about their own change muscles and how they use them whenever disruption hits, whether it's on the job, off the job, or whatever, can be really useful too. So when we do that, one of the things that we do is to help people recognize, we have a tool that we call the Personal Resilience Profile that gives people feedback on which of these muscles are easiest for them to draw on and which ones might be more challenging for them. And so we help them identify, whether they tend to overuse some and underuse others, and then give them ideas about how to strengthen the different characteristics.
Okay, so maybe we can use one of these as an example just to give a little more depth.
Sure.
Of like what you would do. So maybe you could pick one that would have the most interesting story. But
Sure. Absolutely. But, well, let me start with positive, because that's kind of the cornerstone. That's the juice. If you can't sort of bring that positive energy into it, it's a little bit hard to use any of the other ones very much. So when we teach people about positive, there's some sort of ideas that we can share with people. For instance, there's some work that Dr. Martin Seligman has done on learned optimism that talks about the stories we tell ourselves. It talks about sort of how we explain situations to ourselves and the notion that there is an optimistic and a pessimistic explanatory style, so that by noticing the self-talk that we have going on, noticing the stories we're telling ourselves, we can start to change those stories. So that's one thing we might do in training. But another thing that we do is to help people recognize that all around them, every day, we have little chances to perceive situations differently. I tend to think of what we're doing with people as creating a resilience gym, So sort of like you don't teach people to be positive all at once. It's not like you flip a switch and all of a sudden, boom, you become an optimist.
Smile factory.
Right. What you actually do is you build it through everyday kinds of things. So I think of it as sort of, what's your biceps curl for the positive characteristic today? One of the things that we do in my house is, as we sit down to dinner, we each share one thing we're thankful for about that from that day. So a little bit of gratitude. And that kind of practice over time teaches you to pay attention to things that are positive, and is sort of step by step allows you to build that characteristic. another thing that I try to guide people toward is recognizing that the daily hassles that we run into are a chance to practice resilience. So I've actually started helping reframe people, you know, whenever they're talking about something crappy that happened to them. I'm like, oh, good, resilience practice. And usually that makes them laugh, but just beginning to think about, you know, you get into a traffic jam or someone cuts you off on the road. You know, if you can just say to yourself, oh, resilience practice, this is a chance to practice not draining my energy being angry or frustrated, but just taking a breath and getting on with things, or recognizing, you know, maybe this person has something going on in their life that I don't know about, and, you know, and they really need to get there in a hurry. So seeing the whole world as your resilience gym is sort of the big reframe that I invite people to take on.
Now, you alluded earlier to that there might be an adaptation process that people go through when they go through change.
Yeah, and
what does that look like?
And I don't know how accurately I can describe the process, but the first thing that happens when we hit an unfamiliar situation is we tend to define it as either a threat or an opportunity. And, you know, if we define it as a threat, then our brain starts to operate a little bit differently. And we, as I mentioned before, we kind of need to get ourselves to the point where we can think before we can figure out what to do about it. But the adaptation process really is about recognizing how we need to operate to succeed in the new situation. So let me give you an example. We just did some rearranging in our offices and, you know, moved into some expanded space. And so the adaptation process is as simple as sort of those, you know, every day those little things like walking into a different room and turning on the light switch. It's sort of recognizing the new patterns and falling into new patterns of behavior. The cognitive psychologists talk about controlled processing and automatic processing. And controlled processing is when we actually have to think about things and put energy into paying attention to things. So think about when you were first learning to drive. And you had to think about, okay, there's the brake and the accelerator and what gear am I in, especially if you're in a stick shift. And then after some time, it becomes automatic. Well, the adaptation process is very similar. When we're in an unfamiliar situation, we have to pay attention and we have to figure out, how do I operate here? We have to sort of unlearn old associations to things and relearn new associations. And then over time, as that new way of operating starts to become familiar and we've realigned sort of what's going on in our brain with what needs to happen in the world around us, then we can say that we've adapted.
Okay. So I just, you know, sometimes I run across people who say, you know, why can't we just, you know, implement a new process and people can just get used to it? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the just dump and run kind of change approach. So, you know, what's the effect when you do that versus when you help people adapt?
Well, so it's probably several answers to that. I mean, one is they may go through the motions, the superficial motions of change. One of the things that Daryl Connor talks about in his work is the difference between installation and realization. So we can install new technology, a new process or whatever, and sort of say, okay, guys, you know, get on with it, get over it. And they can do that, but realization, getting the full business benefits of what we're trying to put in place with our change initiatives, really has to do with getting people to shift their behaviors and often their mindsets. And so if we push people through the process and just assume that they're going to catch up with us and that they can get it, you know, sometimes they can if it's not that big a change, but sometimes their emotions take a while to catch up with their brains and their bodies. And so we may burn people out. We may cause people to spend a lot of energy in the process. We also may reduce the level of trust that's present in the organization because we have manifestly not been paying attention to people's needs. There's some really interesting work that people have done on communicating under conditions of risk. And really, change is harder on everybody when there's low trust, and it just puts people in a bad place. And that kind of thing can build up in an organization. So yeah, you could probably do it once, but if that's how you implement change every day, you teach people that you don't care about them, that they shouldn't trust you, and that you're not looking out for their best interests, which does not do much to help a positive climate in an organization.
So true. I'm nodding my head in agreement, realizing no one can actually see me do that. So, we titled this program "How to Help Yourself and Others Adapt to Change," and you've talked a little bit about how it sort of encompasses both. But I'm wondering is there a difference in how you would approach helping yourself adapt to change versus helping other people adapt to change?
Probably so. I've never actually thought about it that way, but. So for yourself, I think sometimes we're harder on ourselves than we are on other people. It's like we beat ourselves up sometimes for not getting past stuff. And so I think for ourselves, the invitation is just to be kind, to be loving to ourselves and to give ourselves the time that we need to work through things. I just talked yesterday to a woman whose husband died earlier this year and, who seems to be moving through it in a very positive way. I mean, part of it is the faith that she brings to things, but she's just being forgiving and understanding with herself and recognizing that it's a process that takes time. I think with other people, there's sort of the image of the Boy Scout helping the old lady across the street who really doesn't want to be helped. So, helping other people adapt and move through change, they kind of have to want the help. You sort of can't make somebody adapt. And the more you try, the more you're probably going to kick them into a zone where they're not going to want to do it. So I would say that there's a couple of things that you can do. One is you can create an environment that supports the resilience characteristics. You can create a culture and a setting where resilience is just part of the air that people breathe. So let me give you an example. The resilience characteristic of proactive invites people to try unfamiliar things and move out of their comfort zone. Well, that can sometimes lead to failure. So, we take risks and sometimes we fail. In a culture that beats people up for failing, you're not going to get people displaying that characteristic very much. In a culture that values a little bit of risk-taking and learning from experience and all of that, you're going to get people who are engaged in using that characteristic. We can culturally send a message that focus is not important by simply expecting people to do 100 different things, and when they say, I can't get it all done, they say, I'm sorry, you have to do it anyway. A culture that supports the focused characteristic would be clear about its priorities and would help people be clear about their priorities, too. So we even without people actively collaborating with us in their own adaptation, we can create an environment that supports and reminds people about how to be positive and focused and flexible and organized and proactive. Then in the moment, we can establish a coaching relationship with people. I know people who have used this work in coaching to help people move through significant transitions in their lives. And sometimes we can just help each other out, peer relationships. It may be really easy for me to be positive, but not so easy for me to be organized. Well, maybe we can help each other out and team up on this.
Okay. It also seems like as you're designing the change initiative that you could create programs, tools, systems that might promote these change muscles, like being more focused or being flexible or...
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So for instance, even in a project team meeting, you might be able to say, okay, let's talk about, what's going well in addition to what's not, where we're having challenges and what are our most important goals and let's do some brainstorming. You can live out each of the change muscles and you can really embed them in how you're thinking about and implementing the change.
Great. Well, this has been just a lot of information. This is great. So is there any sort of ribbon that you'd like to tie on this idea of helping people adapt to change?
Yes, I think if I were to tie a ribbon on it, it would be around use the world as your resilience gym. Every day you get chances to practice, and how resilient you are in the little things is very predictive how resilient you're going to be when the big challenges hit.
Yeah, and I would I thought this as you were saying that, that you, as a change agent, modeling what it means to be resilient can also rub off on other people. So,
oh, absolutely. And being just aware of it, yeah.
Yeah. So where can people find out more about this?
So resiliencealliance.com is our website. And the book that you mentioned, Managing Change with Personal Resilience, is another good option. And you can email me. I'm Linda@resiliencealliance.com, and look forward to hearing from you.
Great. Thanks so much, Linda. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Change Agent's Dilemma. If you'd like to be notified of future episodes and other resources to help you influence change in your organization, I invite you to sign up for my monthly newsletter at Enclaria.com. Not only will you receive helpful tips, but when you subscribe, you also receive a free chapter from my change management toolkit called The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative in the new year.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Yeah.